I'll go ahead and tell you, I enjoy reading books. I really do. In fact, I enjoy reading so much, I try to own and read as few books as I possibly can. Now, you may be thinking, wait a second, did he say that correctly? Yes, you heard me right. I try to be very deliberate to limit the amount of books on my reading list precisely because of how much I value my already limited reading time. In the past, it wasn't always the case, but now with a wife and five kids to care for, a church to pastor, a homestead to manage, and all the other hats I have to wear, reading time for me has come in shorter and shorter supply. All the while, the stacks of unread books, and not just stacks, but literally entire sets of shelves of unread books that I've had a desire to read, or that have been recommended to me to read, has been something that has gradually continued to grow over the years. I don't know if you can relate to that problem. Whether they came from the bookstalls at conferences or as gifts from friends and family or from the, you know, the clearance tables at Barnes & Noble, I was in the habit of collecting books twice as fast as I could read through them. My problem only got worse when I realized there were certain books on my shelves that were so good, I wanted to reread them after I'd already read them. In some cases, there were a select few I felt deserved not only a second pass through, but potentially a third and a fourth read. This only compounded the problem of not being able to ever make a dent in my unread stack. Well, I also started to realize there were some books I would read that I felt were perhaps a total waste of my time to read, and I felt no better off for having read them. So it was at that point I realized not all the books on a person's reading list are necessarily created equal, and maybe, just maybe with a little better vetting and a more strategic selection plan, that list could become a whole lot smaller while still becoming so much more meaningful. Eventually, I made the decision to purge my bookshelves of all the books I didn't realistically see myself reading or even rereading. And I started my search and began to narrow my library down to some of the best titles I had discovered or that are known to have stood the test of time, at least in whatever particular categories I feel the need to give attention to. Some may have thought I was a little crazy when they saw me take to Goodwill or donate to our church library a lot of the good titles I parted with, but I did receive some encouragement to the new minimalist approach to reading I've adopted for myself when I read some very supportive thoughts from men like Mortimer Adler, Charles Spurgeon, and later John Piper. In his classic guide to intelligent reading titled How to Read a Book, the respected philosopher of education, Mortimer Adler, argues that the key to good reading isn't a broader reading quantity necessarily, but a deeper reading quality. He writes, quote, "Being well-read too often means the quantity, too seldom the quality of reading." It was not only the pessimistic and misanthropic Schopenhauer who inveighed against too much reading because he found that, for the most part, men read passively and glutted themselves with toxic overdoses of unassimilated information. Bacon and Hobbes made the same point. Hobbes said, "If I read as many books as most men, I should be as dull-witted as they." Bacon distinguished between books to be tasted, others to be swallowed, and some few to be digested. When we speak of someone as well-read, we should have this ideal in mind. Too often, I fear, we use that phrase to mean the quantity rather than the quality of reading. A person who has read widely, but not well, deserves to be pitied rather than praised, for so much effort has been misguided and profitless. That pretty much sums it up. Then I found in one of the chapters of the book, Lectures to My Students, the great preacher Charles Spurgeon address ministers who have what he calls a slender apparatus. And by slender apparatus, he simply means the circumstances of owning a relatively small number of books and study materials due to whatever budgetary limitations constrain them. And to be fair, while Spurgeon's primary recommendation to ministers with a small library was to see if their churches could give them larger budgets in order to afford more, he does reflect on how it's possible to maximize and truly focus one's efforts in the most fruitful of ways with a relatively small number of books. He makes the point, quote, "If a man can purchase but very few books, my first advice to him would be, let him purchase the very best. If he cannot spend much, let him spend well. This age is full of word spinners, professional bookmakers who hammer a grain of matter so thin that it will cover a 5-acre sheet of paper. Forgo, then, without regret, the many books which, like poor Hodges' razors of famous memory, are made to sell, and do sell those who buy them as well as themselves. The next rule I shall lay down is, master those books you have. Read them thoroughly. Bathe in them until they saturate you. Read and reread them. Masticate them and digest them. Let them go into your very self. Peruse a good book several times and make notes and analysis of it. A student will find that his mental constitution is more affected by one book thoroughly mastered than by 20 books which he has merely skimmed, lapping at them, as the classic proverb puts it, as the dogs drink the Nile. Little learning and much pride come of hasty reading. Books may be piled on the brain till it cannot work. Some men are disabled from thinking by their putting meditation away for the sake of much reading. They gorge themselves with book matter and become mentally dyspeptic. Books on the brain cause disease. Get the book into the brain and you will grow. In Disraeli's Curiosities of Literature, there is an invective of Lucian upon those men who boast of possessing large libraries which they either never read or never profit by. He begins by comparing such a person to a pilot who has never learned the art of navigation, or a crippled who wears embroidered slippers but cannot stand upright in them. Then he exclaims, "Why do you buy so many books? You have no hair and you purchase a comb. You are blind and you must need buy a fine mirror. You are deaf and you will have the best musical instrument." A very well-deserved rebuke to those who think that the possession of books will secure them learning. A measure of that temptation happens to us all, for do we not feel wiser after we have spent an hour or two in a bookseller's shop? A man might as well thank himself richer for having inspected the vaults of the Bank of England. In reading books, let your motto be much, not many. Think as well as read, and keep the thinking always proportionate to the reading, and your small library will not be a great misfortune. There's very much sound sense in the remark of a writer in the Quarterly Review many years back. Give us the one dear book, cheaply picked from the stall by the price of a meal, thumbed and dog-eared, cracked in the back and broken in the corner, noted on the flyleaf and scrawled in the margin, sullied and scorched, torn and worn, smoothed in the pocket and grimed on the hearth, damped by the grass and dusted among the cinders over which you have dreamed in the grove and dozed before the embers, but read again and again and again from cover to cover. It is by this one book and its 3 or 4 single successors that more real cultivation has been imparted than by all the myriads which bear down the mile-long bulging bending shelves of the Bodleian. And if you're unfamiliar, the Bodleian is a famous library over in Europe. I'll admit to you, I'm still working on rebuilding my library into that leaner, more robust collection that Spurgeon calls the very best works a person can read. Considering the millions of options that are out there to sort through, that the process of deciding what is or isn't a worthy edition isn't easy. I know some have tried to put together lists of the most important and influential books ever to have been written. There's a book out there called 1,000 Books to Read Before You Die I saw recently. Mortimer Adler himself has put together a list of classics he believes a person should spend their entire lives working through. Honestly, I don't find any of those lists very helpful, since I don't believe everyone is called to focus their attention in all the same areas of study. I'm trying to assemble my list based specifically on the various life goals and particular roles I have in my life. No doubt that's going to look a little different for others. All that to say, finding that narrow selection of whatever books are most worth it for me to read, and not only to read them, but eventually to reread them and perhaps even to reread them again after that, to the point of mastering them, as Spurgeon and Adler talk about, is something I see the value of doing. A few years after I had decided to take Adler and Spurgeon's advice, I was encouraged again when I heard John Piper echo similar sentiments in one of his Ask Pastor John podcasts. The title of the episode was, How Do I Choose Good Books and Grow My Library? And in that episode, I like what he said. He said, quote, "Let me stress that I don't think reading many books is important. Not for the average person anyway. Maybe for the scholar, but not for the average person. Reading good books, solid books, non-sudsy books, substantial books is really important. And reading them well. If you wonder what I mean by reading really well, one place to start is Mortimer Adler's How to Read a Book. Isn't that ironic? He says, this isn't a new book. I read it for the first time after my college days. Oh, I wish I'd read that book even earlier, but I'm so glad I read it in my early 20s. If you want to go deep with how you read, you'll be inspired and helped by that book. He went on to say, beware of reading for quantity to impress anyone, but read for your soul. I thought that was really helpful. I'm sure there are those out there, of course, the scholarly type who are a lot smarter than me and who can read large numbers of books and retain all they read. Unfortunately, that's not me. I'm more of an average intelligence kind of guy when it comes to what my brain can handle. And knowing the limits of what I can retain, I have found the benefit of taking this approach. Not only does my house feel a lot cleaner with fewer dust collectors around, but I feel my heart and mind can reflect a whole lot deeper on those works I'm able to concentrate on over a longer period of time. Quality over quantity is the idea. To be well-read isn't always synonymous with being broadly read. If you want to give more thought to your own approach to reading and how you decide what goes on your reading list and how to approach the books that are on your reading list, I can recommend the book, How to Read a Book by Mortimer Adler. If you haven't looked into that before, it really can change the way you read, allowing you to read more by reading less. I hope this episode's been helpful in some way. I encourage you to subscribe to our channel if you haven't already. Stay tuned for more episodes to come. Until then, God bless.